In some ways, I wonder if it's, maybe it's a, it's a trick, it's a drama. This is all in preparation for something else, and it was done for these other purposes. And often enough, I think about my economic theory, and I think about too the fact that, you know, it took me 10 months to figure this out, and it will work. So long as those three propositions are, you know, adhered to, we're talking amazing renaissance of American life, brilliance, beauty, and the world too. I mean, and whoever wants to sort of jump in on it, if it's helpful for their economic situation. You know, I don't know exactly how it is in all these other nations, but personally, I've watched my own generation get screwed and fleeced and put into, you know, debt servitude, and not just my generation, the next one after that, and the one before too, and a whole lot of people who've been, you know, screwed out by a want to say monopolistic tendencies by the corporations, originally started here and whose ideas were created by Americans, gave them the concept to go forth and do whatever it is they do. And I'm looking at the big tech companies especially here, and then they they go into other countries, and then they don't give a damn about us anymore. They don't follow our laws, disrespect the institutions, disrespect our elected representatives, and then just treat everybody like dirt, and then buy out all their competition, and just to create giant monopolies. The thing is, totalitarian communism and corporate monopolism have the same end goal, have the same end result, I should say. And that's just a giant hierarchy that dictates everything with a couple people at the top, or at the end of it, if we keep pushing with this, eventually it's just going to be the artificial intelligence running the whole thing, running the whole show. And doesn't need to be any, by that point, doesn't need to be any human input whatsoever, and we'll just be taking our orders from a computer, you know. I'm not interested in doing that. I don't let a computer tell me anything. I tell it what to do. I talk to the machine. I make the machine work. I'm the one who runs that crank, right? You know, it's not going to tap me on the shoulder and then, tell me to do something. You know, and I noticed social media, over the course of years, increasingly, with this sort of needling approach to human psychology, where it actively did that. You know, it's a subtle arrangement to push certain emotional buttons in order to get people to act a certain way. And so once you know that, you can sort of immunize yourself to its effects. But at that, even then, it's very, very sophisticated, the algorithms, and the amount of information that it has at its disposal in order to influence one's behavior and emotions is massive. The more you use it, the more information it has in order to manipulate your emotions, manipulate the way you act, what your behavior is. And so the more you feed it, the more it gets stronger. And then it's telling you what to do much more so than you're telling it. But that's the psychological approach that's come on for this social media. But there's also the approach when it comes to how AI is utilized in, let's say, in the work setting, in a corporate setting. Okay, you know, I saw that some videos of some nurses who were talking about the hospitals that they were working in, and they were showing that the computer says to do this for this person, and they look at it, it's just look at the computer. Computer tells you what to do. Computer tells you to, you know, change the IV or to give them this sedative or to, you know, any number of different things. You know, they look at the computer that has you give it the input for who this person is, what their ailments are, and then it spits back out what it is that what it is the nurse, the doctor is supposed to do. Now, oddly enough, I saw this. I saw a number of stories creeping up over the years that, and these are the sort of things that would show up in, you know, Scientific American or Discover Magazine, any of those, where they would be like, oh, it looks like artificial intelligence is better at arguing a court case than a lawyer, or artificial intelligence is better at diagnosing a particular cancer than most doctors. It's 15% more accurate, or something like this. And I'm just like, when I read something like that, when you read something like that, it's you have to wonder, okay, who decides if it's accurate or not? Did you go in there, every person, like, okay, well, the computer says in all these situations that this person has kidney cancer or something, and the doctor says in these other situations this person has kidney cancer. But let's see, so if the doctor was correct 75% of the time and the AI was right 80% of the time, or, you know, 85% of the time, then it's a slight increase of percentages. But how do you confirm that? How do you confirm that the doctor was right? How do you confirm the computer was right? Do you cut into them and then see if there's actually cancer there? And you're telling me that that was done with every one of these? Like, the statistical... This is another thing that's been... one of the many ways that we've been hoodwinked over the years. Statistical chicanery. And one of the things that... hypotheses that I've been looking into that coincide with the... begin with the Industrial Revolution and beginning of the 20th century and the various scientific absolutes that we've been told over the years. One of them that has come up, and I've noticed this in the online forums, and have been building up for ages amongst the environmentalist groups, folks talking about population. Honestly, population's getting huge. Population. Look at it. It's exponential growth. Look at that. Exponential growth. It goes way up there like that. Isn't that crazy? This is nuts. We can't keep growing like this. Too much population. Too much. And you know, even to the point where people are saying like, oh my God, I can't believe they're having kids. Oh my God. Look at that. People of my age in their 20s, oh, they had kids. Oh, that's so horrible and irresponsible. No. First off, no, it's not. Okay. So, first off, population declining in Western countries, period. It just is. Now, that might even be an effect of this very ideology, also an effect of the pollution and toxins that we have throughout our society, also an effect of the questionable medicines, and not to say it, a lot of the excessive vaccination has been going on to reduce sperm counts, to mess with fertility, to mess with the immune system, autoimmune responses, all sorts of factors going into this. But, and all of those, of course, are a direct result of pretty much government intervention of sorts. You know, excessive regulation of industries, kicking out smaller competitors, vilification of holistic doctors, vilification of private schooling, of homeschooling, vilification of, you know, people who want to eat food that isn't covered in poison and drink clean water, breathe clean air, all that sort of thing. But one aspect when it comes to the population issue that that seems to me needs to be added to the equation is that when all this population has been exploding, the question is, at the same time this population has been going up, people have been supposedly having all of these kids and population all across the world is exploding in the last 150 years since the Industrial Revolution. Was this not also the same time period where governments started really keeping track of people? Was this not also the same time that that was happening, where they were going out and taking censuses? They're going out and actually counting people. And especially in places like Africa and in India and in China. Like, I mean, part of the population boom might be much, a little bit less than people actually reproducing more, and might be a little more the fact that we created systems and we had a whole lot of people running around the earth counting how many other people there are. So rather than people reproducing in astonishing numbers, they're just going around counting people. And so we just have a better, understanding of how many people there are on the planet. And how long does it take to do that? It might take 100 years. Build up a government here, there, the other. Another one that can actually go out there and actually count people. Because you can take estimates all day long. How much are those worth? Not much. You know? Anyway. That's one aspect. Keep in mind for the population problem. Not only is A, population declining in the Western world, but also that much of the population increase might be simply a result of actually counting, having a better account of the people who are already there. So that's something to keep in mind. Also, when it comes to other aspects, what's been going on for the last 100 years, again, we talked about compulsory state education, we talked about the medical system, which, I mean, there's great places you can hear about histories of this, how it was the Rockefeller Foundation back in the early 1900s, started the American Medical Association, and they created a all allopathic medicine, and they shut down the homeopathic practitioners, the holistic practitioners, that sort of thing. There's a whole history of this, and the regulatory capture when it comes to this. If you control the regulations and you're also running the industry, I mean, it's monopoly power of the absolute highest order. Also, speaking of monopoly power, this is an interesting analogy as it concerns a new economic. So really, I'd like to put out a call here for renewed, call for a new economic, because one of the things I mentioned in the video, and that I've mentioned many times, written as well. And also, if you haven't actually looked at that, Saving the World in Three Easy Steps, a New Economic, is a way for us to use our economic and financial wizardry toward the benefit of everyone in the country and across the planet. It can solve so many problems. It's ridiculous. So many issues could just be quite easily a thing of the past. And so check that out if you haven't already. And then come back to this. But when it comes to that, something that I noticed, and as a result of being, or feeling, that is to say, that I have some part to play in what's happening in the world at present, is that it wasn't much more than a year ago that I came up with it. And I spent a couple months, or at least 1 month. I think it was 2 months. It was the end of July in 2019 that I brought it up. So it was mid-May through July, maybe a month and a half, something like that, where I simply thought about the idea and tried to extrapolate and imagine every situation in which it could be used to benefit, or imagine a situation, any situation, that it could be used against the people. And it seems to me that, after a month and a half, just by virtue of, I mean, I had to come up with that, because otherwise it's a very powerful thing. Very powerful thing. Ideas are powerful. Knowledge is power. Anyone who tells you otherwise, they don't understand. But it really is. Ideas, really creative ideas. This is one of the beauties of being human beings. Like, remember Alex Jones, one of my favorite things he ever said was when he was talking to, he had that podcast with Joe Rogan, and they talk about everything, you know, of course. But one of the favorite things that he said, they started getting into spiritual sort of stuff, esoteric type of things, and he said that human beings are badasses, and we really are, because we have this astonishingly strong physical presence in the three-dimensional world, and we also have an astonishingly strong spiritual presence. I mean, once you really understand the power that you have on a spiritual level and on a psychological level, and on a physical level, I mean, we are astoundingly powerful. The possibilities are absolutely endless. We are capable of astounding feats, and not necessarily as, even as an individual. You know, lots of times you think, oh, it's just one person that we've been, you know, had this pushed into us that, oh, you're just one person. You can't, you know, go against this giant group. You gotta be part of a group in order for, you know, something to, in order to have power. It's not the case. Even on individual level, we are astoundingly powerful in the things that we can do, you know? You just take a look at some of the great individuals throughout history and what they were able to do just in their short lifetimes. And again, take a lot of that with a grain of salt, because a lot of these histories and biographies are written by the winners, but also could also be written for in nefarious manners too. So again, going back to that, writing is a brilliant thing, and it's amazing, and reading is too, but a lot of it can be Trojan horses in order to skew your mind, that sort of thing. Anyway, but he said human beings are badasses, and we really are. And that's one of the things I've tried to express. I mean, from day one, going out and doing the poetry that I have, is just sort of put forth the idea to folks that they are capable of doing incredible, incredible work. but it's just because I'm tall and you know, strong and I'm a straight white male, or the identity politics of who I am, you know, these things are not what has allowed me to excel in my life. Anyone is capable of it. I also happen to be blessed with a couple of amazing parents. And, you know, that's really important. Really, really important. Family, like people. And this gets into, some of the race war, manufactured race war, that's been trying to get built up for some while. And the fact that, you know, you look at what happened with black families in the 60s, 70s, that sort of thing, 80s, and again, at the crash in 2009, that, and also through the drug war, to keep those prisons filled up and to make sure that black families, kids rarely had a father in the house. Like, I mean, that'll tear apart your whole community over and over and over again. Doesn't matter what color your skin is. If you don't have a solid family unit, if you don't have people you can really trust in your life, I mean, it's, especially when you're growing up, it's astoundingly easy to get lost. And this has been weaponized against communities across our country for decades by nefarious forces, individuals and organizations that basically just want to, you know, put in any, be very blunt here, but they want to take down our country, you know, for various power-hungry purposes. And, you know, the sooner we realize that, the anger that people are feeling out there, a lot of the black community, and a lot of the younger folks as well, the anger's real. Emotion is real, right? I mean, you're angry? You've had a shitty life. You've been treated like dirt by, you know, all these organizations, all these people from school to work to everywhere else, to, you know, family members getting thrown in jail, people getting shot, all sorts of horrific, terrible things. You got a right to be angry. But the thing is, what's so important on that front is to direct your anger toward the real enemy. Who is it really that's been doing this to you? Who is it really that set up the conditions such that you could not succeed? You know, and in the last couple decades, you can really look at it and see that it's the international corporations, it's their affiliated regulatory capture, it's various rogue government agencies, and it's some subversives from quite possibly from other countries who basically they want a bigger piece of the global pie, and so they want to take us down from just straight power mad you know, psycho criminals. There's all sorts of rationale for this. And then some of it ends up getting conflated with other positive movements as well. And there's as well with propaganda, in order to connect disparate yet unconnected issues with that very thing. And there's so much information warfare on this front going on. And I just encourage everyone who's feeling angry that emotions are real. You have a right to be angry, but know who the real enemy is. And more so, realize that there is a way out of this that doesn't involve burning down the system. Which brings me back to the way out of this. And that is, that's a new economic. And when I mentioned in that video, one of the things that is especially important is that I said that, this is the sort of thing, running these three propositions is the sort of thing that, would have gotten us out of the Great Depression, like immediately, would have also gotten us out of that, the housing market crash back in 2009. And now we have this global depression that got hit, this, synthetic, artificial, top-down, enforced depression. And this new economic can get us right out of this too, you know, in a second. Because we haven't, it goes back to the fact that you look around and what have we actually lost? Like, what's really gone? You know, we have just as many, we have just as much food, just as much electricity, just as much water, just as much housing, just as many talented people, just as much, you know. I mean, in fact, perhaps even more in some ways, with the incentives to bring back manufacturing and factories back to the States, where and this is one of the big issues. And I got to remind folks again that one of the major angles that I went after this, that that led me to this issue, was looking at the environmental aspect of modernity, of the way civil society and the civilizations across the world, at least so far as I could tell, from what I, you know, read in the newspapers and everything else, consensuses and that sort of thing, that there's a tremendous environmental damage going on. And from what I've seen in my own life, with my own eyes, I've been witness to it. Hiking through the cattle fields, the crop grounds, the woods, everywhere and anywhere, in the deepest, darkest woods to the most serene meadows of northeast Kansas, I can confirm that there's a fair amount of environmental destruction going on. Namely, around here, the most obvious is the lack of wildlife, and the soil quality of GM crops. You can tell in the spring, before anything's planted, when it gets to about late February, early March, you can just drive down the road. You can just drive down the highway and see this, where there are stretches of highway where if you look over to the left, over on the left side, you'll see miles of barren dirt. And it hadn't been touched since it got, this is before it got, it's gotten tilled or anything. Hadn't been touched since harvest in the fall. Just barren. Nothing there. Just gray dirt. That's it. Maybe some corn stalks and a few other things. Or what's left of the soybeans. And then you look over to your right, and there is crop ground that is sprouting with this, the juiciest, greenest grass you've ever seen in your life. It's just grown up of its own accord, right where there were, right where they had 20 acres of row crops. And you can see this is a very, it's about the largest contrast you could see. You can see in soil quality and in spring growth. And that is a result of the industrial agriculture and the various poisons that we dump into it and the fertilizers and injections of elements and everything else that we put into it. And I'd seen this as very troubling. That's just two of the things, you know. Lack of wildlife and the destruction of the soil. That I noticed, it's been so obvious. That led me to, into the environmental angle of trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to do with our society here? Because this looks bad. This does not appear that it's going to be, this isn't sustainable, and we could be living in a much better manner. And if we continue living like this, it's going to end up, it's going to be some big time trouble. And so I tried to figure out a way that we could do that. That we could sort of slow down our industrial agriculture, slow down our usage of fossil fuels, slow down the pollution, not use chemicals so much for everything, and kind of reduce our footprint. I don't want to say carbon footprint, but footprint in general. To kind of give nature a breather. And it seemed to me that this new economic would actually work for it, because so much of the time is that we are so much of the, for a lot of folks, not everybody wants to work, you know, blitzkrieg pace every day, you know, charge out and work 12 hours a day, 70 hours a week, in order to make money, go, 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 go. There's a certain significant portion of the population, whether it's in the United States or anywhere else, that isn't really as interested in that. You know, it just depends on your personality. Okay, what is it? Do you like to have a, kind of enjoy more of a calm life and just kind of enjoy the little things, kind of serenity, kind of living like a monk, or not necessarily that level, but just take it easy in life? Or are you the type that likes the adrenaline? You know, you want the fancy car, you want to go skydiving, you want to do all these things, and that's all cool. Like, whatever you want to do, like, that's great. You want to make a ton of money and have a big house and all that, like, that's okay, you know, and good on you, you know, if you went out there, you got what you wanted. And for some people, it just, you know, kind of would like a modest life, and don't necessarily need all that stuff, you know, they find their wants in other things, and that's okay. Like, this is the thing is, you know, if we can create a society which, if that's what you want, you can have that. And if that's what you want, you can have that. And if that's what you want over there, you can have that. If that's what you want over there, you can have that. And if you're not harming anybody by doing any of those things, then great, you know. And the thing is, there's a significant portion of the population that doesn't want to go out there and work 12 hours a week and make all this money, but just wants to relax a bit, you know, work some enough to have a decent existence, but not so much that they're, you know, not spending all their life on it. And what I've noticed is that the sort of system we've had in place here for some while, and increasingly so in my generation, is that A lot of people aren't afforded the ability to do that, and they haven't been. There's been, you know, the debt that has come with medical procedures, medical problems, drugs, all that sort of thing is massive. Debt that comes with schooling is massive. The debt that you go into to buy a house, get a mortgage, is huge. I mean, absolutely tremendous. And it's really unnecessary. And what it does, though, and if that, just to rent a place, you know, in a city somewhere, it requires that you go out there and you have to work super, super, super hard. And just in order to have a basic existence. And that, you know, when you institute this new economic, you actually give the ability for people to, again, to do less. They don't have to go out there. And, you know, if you own your apartment, you don't have to work 7 hours a week doing minimum wage in order to take care of yourself and your family. If you own that, then, I mean, it's just, that's massive. You don't have to work nearly as hard to make money. And at the same time, if you only have to work then, let's say 4 or 6 hours a day or something like that, or at least, you know, reduced to a certain level, that frees up your time to do other things that you are actually interested in doing, you know? Whether it's personal work, whether it's starting your own business, doing what you actually love, you know, following through with your dreams, that sort of thing, it allows for that. It allows anybody to do that too. Now, I don't care where you live; people are different everywhere. In any society, there's some people who have different mindsets, who want different things, and. You know, this reminds me of the recent essay concerning foundational principles of civil society, where you look at the Golden Rule, right? Now, Golden Rule, it's a miracle, and it's gotten us pretty far, but it doesn't quite, even following through with it in all sincerity, the best you can. It doesn't quite, you know, take care of all situations. Because the thing is, that person that you're treating the way that you want to be treated might want to be treated differently than the way that you want to treat yourself. I mean, that's just the case. Sometimes that could happen. Obviously, you're getting closer if you're treating them as well as you treat yourself. You're getting closer to, you know, an ideal in your interaction. But you're not right on it. And for that matter, there's a certain percentage of the population who are, and evidently so, sociopaths and psychos. And there are certain people who are masochists, who actually like to be harmed. They, you know, it's just the case. Some people are like that. And some, often enough, it's because they've been harmed earlier by someone else who was harmed earlier. It's a cycle of abuse that many psychiatrists are very well aware of. And so it's not a catch-all. It doesn't work for everything. It works for most things, but not for everything. The problem especially arises on a societal level when you get people in charge who are sociopaths, who are psychos, who actually don't like themselves and don't actually like anyone else, and they're imposing this attitude upon all of their subordinates. And if they have a large enough organization, their subordinates are many, and another organization with someone else at the top could have subordinates who are many as well, and on and on and on. And so that can perpetuate a cycle of a societal cycle of abuse in a similar manner that you might find in, on an individual level. But opening up the options for people to actually do what they really want to do is ultimately the ideal here. So when we have something like we have the Bill of Rights, we have the Constitution going for us, right? Individual rights are protected, and I'm not letting that go at all. And no true American should let any of that go, regardless of what any, you know, power-hungry governor or mayor or, you know, bureaucrat, high-level bureaucrat, claims, either says or writes on paper and says, you must do this. No. No. I'm not... Not happening, buddy. Like, so having that as a base for us is absolutely vital in order for us to get to that next level, in order for us to really bring out the next American Renaissance. And with that, I think I'll close this edition of this extemporaneous verbal essay by saying that the three propositions, saving the world in three easy steps, a new economic, the Great Awakening part 1 or 5 or 12 or whichever portion it is amongst the many other awakenings that are happening across the world, across society, in the general zeitgeist today, that this, it really will work for us, and it will bring on the next Renaissance. It's a spiritual thing. It's an individual thing. It's a societal thing. It's all the things, you know, all at once. And the more we, you know, look into what we really want in life, what we really desire, the more we start to respect ourselves, the more we start to respect each other, the more we start to love ourselves, the more we start to love each other, because for me that has not gone away. doesn't really matter what gets thrown at me, and it shouldn't matter to you either. You should always love yourself and respect yourself, and at the same time extend that love and respect to others. So on that note, I will leave it at that. This has been Garrett Tufte, and I wish you peace and strength and harmony for the now and in the times to come. Talk to you again later.